Luke chapter 7, verse 36. It says, when one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. So picture the picture. They're not sitting at a table like we do. They lay down on their side at the table and eat like that. Very comfortable, very relaxing. You can go right into your nap after eating. A woman in that town, verse 37, who lived a sinful life, which is probably Luke's way of letting us know she's a prostitute, learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, so she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. This would have been an incredibly expensive perfume, probably her life savings and security there invested in that. And she comes into the place, which isn't unusual. It would be weird if you had dinner and just random people walked in your house. But there in that culture at that time, doors were left open. And especially when you have a meal with somebody who's significant, people would come in and out and watch what was going on. So that's what's happening. Verse 38, as she stood behind Jesus at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. So then she let out her hair and she wiped his feet with her hair and kissed his feet and poured perfume on them. And when the Pharisee who had invited Jesus saw this, he said to himself in his mind, man, if this guy were a real prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner. He didn't say it out loud, same way you do when you think of something good to say back to somebody. You think it in your head, but you don't say it out loud. That's what he did. He said it in his head. But Jesus answered him anyway, because he knew what he was thinking, and said, Simon, I have something to tell you. And he says, well, tell me, teacher. Verse 41, two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii, which is about 20 months, about 2 years' worth of wages. And the other owed him 50, about 2 months' worth of wages. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both of them. Now, which one of them will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. And Jesus said, you have judged correctly. And then Jesus turned to looked at the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house and you didn't give me water for my feet, but she's wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss, but this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You didn't put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little. And then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. And the other guests began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? And Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Father, I just pray that you would speak to us through your word today. Jesus, through this encounter you had with Simon and with this woman, I pray that every one of us listening today would walk away from this moment experiencing the same peace she found that day. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. You may be seated. So about a month or so ago, we started this series called Good Dirt. And let me remind you where it started. It started with the passage that comes right after the story we read today. Jesus told a parable about different soils, and he said this farmer went out, and he sowed seed into the ground, and some of the ground was hard, and so the seed never even got in, and some of it was full of rocks, and so the soil was really shallow, it never grew, and some of it was full of thorns and briars and all that stuff, and so the seed kind of started to grow up, but then got choked out, and some of it was good soil, good dirt, and it received this word about God's kingdom, and it let it inside, and then it entered God's kingdom, and it grew up and became fruitful. And what Jesus is talking about there is he's saying, look, here I am, I have come, I'm this farmer, and I am sowing the seeds of this new creation. I'm sowing the seeds of God's kingdom. And how are you going to hear it? And are you going to be the kind of good dirt that takes it in and where it grows in you and produces fruit? Are you going to be the kind of person who enters into it, or are you going to be left standing outside? And what does it look like to be the kind of person that God's new creation is actually growing in? These are the questions we've been wrestling with these last few weeks. And so where we started, as we've looked at different encounters around this parable, we've learned the different pieces from this parable. So week one, we said, okay, when we listen to Jesus, the reason he told this parable, he said, when you listen, when you hear me tell you about God's kingdom and what he's doing, don't listen with a hard heart where you keep him out and don't let it in. Don't listen with a shallow heart where it gets in a little, but not very far. And don't listen with a divided heart, one where you try and fit it in among all the other things that you're trying to do in your life. Instead, listen with a receptive heart where you allow Jesus' words to take root and sink in and produce life in you. That's not a one-time decision you make. You come to an altar. It is a life that you live, a fruit-producing soil. That's what we're called to be. And so a few weeks ago, Craig preached, and he talked to us about having the kind of faith that goes deep instead of being shallow. And if you remember what he talked about, right? Having the kind of faith that stops Jesus in his tracks and having the kind of faith that allows Jesus to stop you in your tracks. This is about allowing God's word in and allowing it to go deep and not being shallow-hearted, but taking in his word. And then a couple weeks ago, Rob talked to us about having a divided heart. And he talked about the people who were like, you know, Jesus, we want you to be this and we want you to be that. They were trying to fit Jesus into their different categories. And you can't fit Jesus into your different categories and priorities. He is Jesus Christ. And that doesn't mean his first name is Jesus and his last name is Christ. It means Jesus the Christ. That's a label. That means the King. And so he doesn't fit in alongside of all your other things in your life or my life. He's the King. He takes charge of our life. We need to be the kind of soil that doesn't just try to let him in a little bit, but that lets him in all the way. Doesn't divide him among other things, but gives him control. And then last week, Max talked to us about not having hearts that are hardened by sin and talked to us about taking sin seriously. And he talked from Exodus and from the Psalms about how God hates sin because sin is a hard heart toward God and what he's trying to do to bring about new creation and restore beauty and order. And sin is saying, God, I don't want that. God, I reject that. I'm going to do my own thing. We're going to do our own thing. Of course, God hates sin. It keeps us away from this new creation, from the beauty and order that he is bringing into this world and going to do in recreating this world. And of course, God hates anything that keeps people he loves from that. And we should hate it too, because sin keeps us from God and from others. And it hardens our hearts so we don't even hear God's offer. We stop hearing it. And I hope none of us are in that place today. But today we come to this story, and we get a picture of the kind of heart that receives God's kingdom, the kind of heart God's kingdom can grow in, kind of heart that this new creation can start in, the kind of person who would enter into this kingdom. That's the picture we get from this simple story about Jesus and a very religious man and a prostitute sitting down around a dinner table. And somewhere in the crisscrossing of these three lives in this moment, somehow in their perspectives about each other and about themselves, we learn more about what it means to be the kind of person, the good dirt person, who can actually receive God's kingdom and have it grow in us. So that's what I want to do today, is I want to just look through their different perspectives. And let's start with Simon and his perspective, what he thought of himself, what he thought of Jesus, and what he thought of this woman. And let me just encourage you as we start, don't be too quick to judge Simon. Don't think of him as just a character in a story who's obviously there to play the bad guy. He is a real person. He was a very real person who walked this earth in time and in space, who had feelings just like you and I do, who had opinions just like you and I do. And the truth is, you and I are very much like him. We would respond very much the way he did. Because look, if you invited me to dinner and I walked into your house, or we went out to eat and we're sitting there and a prostitute came up and started kissing my feet and giving me expensive gifts, what would you think? Anything good? And vice versa, right back at you. I don't want to be the bad guy in this story. So let's just acknowledge that if we were in Simon's shoes, we'd be forming a lot of the same opinions he was forming. But let's look closely at Simon and the way he sees himself, the way he sees Jesus, and the way he sees this woman. Simon would have seen himself as a Luke tells us multiple times within a couple verses he's a Pharisee, so we get the point. He's one of the people, and don't, when you hear Pharisee, if you've been around church a lot, you've heard that name, and it's like, oh, they're the bad guys. Don't just sweep them away that way. These were people who cared very much about following God's ways so that God's people could be restored and God's kingdom on earth could be restored. They cared very much about doing that and getting everybody to do that. The truth is that they were often misguided. They were often hypocritical. They were often focused more on the surface of things, and Jesus exposed that. But their goal was to be God's people, and part of that goal meant protecting people from charlatans, protecting people from all the fakes and the phonies who kept coming up, because a lot of people did, came up and said, oh, I'm the Messiah. I'm going to lead us to freedom. I'm going to lead us into God's promised land. And so these Pharisees were part of the ones who, well, they would watch out for the people and watch and test and judge and just say, no, that person's a fake. That person's a fraud. That person's a phony. So Simon would be the kind of person who worked very hard to be righteous, to be good. And he would try very hard to stay that way, to appear that way. So he saw himself as pure, certainly as someone who was more pure than most, definitely more pure than this prostitute who walked into his house and started cleaning Jesus' feet with her hair and her tears and this perfume. And so then when Jesus tells this little parable about the person who owes a 2 months' debt and the person who owes like 2 years' worth of salary debt and how neither can pay, Simon would have heard the beginning of that parable and he would have thought of himself as the person whose, his sin debt wasn't very big. His sin debt was pretty manageable. He was a good guy. He didn't let it get out of control. He behaved. He did what was right. He was righteous. He would have seen himself as a person with manageable debt. That's not what Jesus' story was. In Jesus' story, neither of them could manage their debt. But he would have seen himself, in comparison to others, as someone who was managing and handling his spiritual debt. And his sin debt wasn't so great. So then this woman comes in, and how does he see her? Well, of course, he doesn't want anything to do with her and the sinful life she lives, because he knows bad company corrupts good character. So he's not gonna go near her. He doesn't mention her, except for in his own mind. He doesn't say anything. It's almost like he's like, okay, I'm gonna go into shun mode. I'm gonna pretend she's not here, and hopefully she'll leave without me having to interact with her and take the risk of being tainted by her sinfulness. So he's just completely ignoring her, doesn't care to hear her story or her situation or what's been going on in her life, doesn't even try to engage with her. And it's obvious that he quickly saw her for what he believed she was, a sinful person, lost and hopeless in her life of sin, someone to just avoid and stay away from. And then how did he see Jesus? How did Simon see Jesus? When the encounter starts, he's invited Jesus to his home. So it sounds like he's one of the several Pharisees who wanted to hear Jesus out, who wanted to hear what he had to say, who wanted to let Jesus talk and draw their own conclusions based on what they observed in what Jesus was doing. And so he allows Jesus to come into his home, but he doesn't, he's not a fanboy. He's not gushing all over Jesus. He's not giving him oil for his head. He didn't have to do that, but it would have been a nice thing to do. He doesn't give him water for his feet. That would have been a very polite thing to do, but he's more like, okay, come sit down and eat with me. I want to check you out. It's very much, I'm having you in to judge you, not to host you. Not because I like you, but I need to check you out. And then because of what happens at that dinner, Simon goes from seeing him as, well, maybe he is a prophet, to saying, nope, this guy's a fraud. You know, I'll just call him teacher now. He sees him as a fake, obviously not sent by God, obviously not a prophet, because to Simon's way of thinking, if he were, he'd see and know what this woman is, and he would, like Simon, have nothing to do with her. So Jesus didn't pass his test, and because Jesus didn't pass his test, Simon didn't extend any kind of loving hospitality to Jesus. It only went that far, and that was it. We don't know the end of Simon's story. We don't know what happened after all this. But the silence at the end of the story about him leads me to think that this woman, while she walked away in the peace Jesus gave, Simon probably walked away confused. In the end, the sinful woman enters into this new creation, and it enters into her, and Simon ends up being the one who's hard-hearted, and it doesn't get in, and he doesn't enter into God's kingdom. And like many of us, the reason why is the same reason, the same thing that keeps you and I out. It's our self-righteousness. It's this idea that my sin's manageable. I'm okay. Look at these other people. I'm okay. I'm not doing bad. He didn't measure himself in comparison with the one he owed the debt to. He measured himself in comparison with everybody else around him. And that's where he found his peace. He found peace in looking at people like this woman and other people and saying, I'm obviously more righteous than them. I'm doing okay. The same way we often do. The reason why you and I don't spend a whole lot of time worrying about our sin is because we're measuring by other people who are so much obviously more worse than you and I, which is probably not even right half the time. That's self-righteousness. And the one thing that will keep you and me and anybody else from entering into God's kingdom or having God's new creation enter into them is this self-righteousness. This idea that, you know, I'm managing my debt load. Finding peace and comparing to others. It keeps us from realizing the debt of our sin and that it's put us in. When I'm self-righteous, I won't love Jesus. And God's kingdom doesn't grow in those who don't love Jesus. So that's Simon. That's Simon. I wish we didn't connect with him as much as we do, but the truth is we connect with him quite a bit. Now let's switch over to the woman's perspective. How did she see herself walking into that room? And sometimes this is where we can go wrong. We think, oh, she knows she's sinful. She knows she's bad. She knows she was leading a life that wasn't any good. So she probably walks in there feeling like trash. And that's why she wipes Jesus' feet with her hair, because she's like, I'm trash. I'm dirt. I only deserve. But no, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's how she saw herself. And I don't think that's a right way to ever see ourselves. Because even though sin may trash God's image in us, God never saw us as trash. He saw us as valuable, valuable enough to die for us. So we're guilty, yes, but our sin doesn't make us trash. And she doesn't walk in there feeling like, oh, I'm such a bad person, timidly and afraid and all that stuff. She walks in there thinking, from what I can see, two things. One, Jesus has forgiven me. Like, he has changed my life. I love him. He changed the trajectory of my life. I love him. He restored my life. He set me free from sin, from these things that had me bound. He told me how to be in God's kingdom. He invited me into God's kingdom. I love him. Those are the two thoughts. Jesus, what he did for her, and how much she loves him. And we don't know exactly what her story was before, but we do know she'd been on one track, living one kind of life, and then she encountered Jesus, and it changed the direction of her life. And so she walks in there thinking of herself as having been restored and set free and loving Jesus. That's her, how she sees herself. How does she see Simon? She doesn't. She doesn't even notice him. She doesn't notice him or the other guests there. She's not worried about them or what they might think when she lets down her hair to wipe Jesus' feet or how humiliating it might be to do that. She's not worrying about them or about their opinions of her or what they might think. She's only thinking, I love Jesus. Which, okay, what is she thinking about Jesus? We've said it a million times already. She loved Jesus with an appreciation that only comes from recognizing our guilt, my guilt, your guilt, and seeing it was unpayable, and yet Jesus did it. There's no appreciation without that. There's no real appreciation. There's no real love for Jesus until we appreciate that. She loved him so much that she didn't care about the embarrassment. Her worship was extravagant. She's pouring out what would have been her life security. However much you have in your savings account, imagine emptying it out right now for Jesus. Like taking the contents, buying perfume with it, and then pouring all that perfume on Jesus. Imagine doing that. That's how extravagant this act of worship was. And more than that, more than even that, she believed. This is what's important about how she saw Jesus. She believed that Jesus had the authority and the power to forgive her sin. She believed that about Jesus. She trusted that about Jesus. And that's why Jesus commended her faith. She believed Jesus when he told her that he forgave her sin, that it was wiped away and gone. When he invited her into God's community, God's kingdom, God's new creation, she believed her that she was in. And in her, we find this beautiful picture of what it really means to be the kind of person God's new creation is growing in, the kind of person who enters into this new creation. It starts with God offering to forgive our debt because Jesus paid it. Someone had to pay it. And then we respond with faith in Jesus. We respond with faith that he's able to do that, willing to do that, and has done it. And that faith, you know how it's expressed itself? In love. In extravagant, unhindered love. And that's how Jesus looked at her and knew she's received forgiveness. Just look at the way she loves. The evidence of that faith that leads to us being saved and forgiven of our debt is this love and this worship for Jesus. God's kingdom grows in those who most love Jesus. Above everything else in this world, above everything else, they find their security. They love Jesus. They find it all in him. And the more you and I realize the depth of the forgiveness we've received, the more you and I will love Jesus. The more we recognize how much God hates sin and how much it offends God that we would pretend he is inconsequential and that his opinion or his wisdom about life isn't as important or valuable as our own wisdom about life. The more we realize how foolish all that is and how much that offends God, the more we realize, oh my goodness, I had a debt I couldn't pay. And then we realize what Jesus did, and then we respond with love. Not just one time, not just, yeah, I used to do that, but every moment, every day. That never gets old when you see that debt. There's a guy named Brian Chappell wrote a book called In the Grip of Grace. And in that book, he shares a story of an airplane that crashed outside Detroit. It was Northwest Airlines Flight 225. It was August of 1987, actually just a few days from now, the anniversary will be. And they had just taken off from the airport in Detroit. There were 156 people on the plane. The plane went down, crashed on the highway outside Detroit, and 155 people died, and only one survived, a four-year-old girl named Cecilia. At first, when they found her, they didn't think she had been on the plane because they didn't find her with the plane. They found her out on the highway. And they thought she had been in one of the cars that was on the highway, but when they checked the manifest, they saw she had been a passenger on that plane. So what happened? How in the world did 155 people die, everyone else on the plane, but she survived and there she is okay on the highway? She told them what happened. She survived because as the plane was falling, her mother unbuckled herself from her own seat and then put herself in front of Cecilia, wrapped her body around Cecilia, got on her knees and wrapped her arms and body around her and would not let her go. And this is what he writes. He says, nothing could separate that child from her mother's love. Neither tragedy nor disaster, neither the fall nor the flames that followed, neither height nor depth, neither life nor death. Like that child caught in the middle of the disaster, so we have been trapped by our own sin, spiraling down to an inevitable doom. But our God loved us so much that he left heaven, came to our level, and covered us with the sacrifice of his own body so that we might be saved from the fall. How do you respond to someone who does that for you? And that still doesn't really compare to everything Jesus did. That just gives us a small ability to grasp what it is that Jesus did. How do you treat someone who's done that for you? Do you kind of, okay, you know, Jesus, I'll give you this amount of affection. I'll give you this amount of worship. You can have this part of my life. Or do you just pour your whole self out on them? Forget what anybody else is saying. Forget what they think about the way you love Jesus and follow Jesus. The way you give for Jesus and follow and become like Jesus. Forget all that stuff. Do you just, every fiber of your being poured out on him? God's kingdom grows in those who most love Jesus. Most of you listening to me, at some point in your life, I'm going to guess you've responded to Jesus with that kind of faith. Most of you, you've had that moment where you realized it and you responded and you were overwhelmed by it and you reacted with worship and praise and it just really changed your life. You had that moment of just extravagant, Jesus, I love you. I can't believe you did this for me. And you felt it emotionally. You felt it spiritually. You felt it intellectually. It just gripped your heart and you had that moment. But the question is, was it just a moment where the seed fell in and stopped, or has it been blossoming? Has God's kingdom been growing in you? Has it grown cold in your life? Have you now moved more over to like Simon's spot where you're like, he doesn't need me to give him something to wash his feet. He doesn't need me to like pour oil on it. He doesn't need my gifts. He doesn't, like, are you withholding now? Are you back to withholding saying, you know, if Jesus does something big in my life, then, you know, you better believe I'm going to respond with love. But, you know, I'll just kind of, Are you withholding? Are we moving more over to being like Simon? Or are we living perpetually like this woman because we're constantly and perpetually realizing what he has done for us? And that never grows old. It never grows tired. It never grows commonplace. It shapes every thought. Can any of us here say, or watching from wherever you're watching, say that that's the case? That could be the case. And that's the place where we find this peace this woman found. God's kingdom grows in those who most love Jesus. There's one more perspective we have to talk about. That's Jesus' perspective. Let's end there. How did Jesus see this woman? It's pretty obvious, right? Everyone should be able to explain this. Simon saw a woman coming in, crying on Jesus' feet and causing a scene and letting her hair down. You don't let your hair down in public if you're a woman. Picture whatever like would be the most embarrassing thing for a woman to do in public today. That's what letting her hair down kind of was for her there. Simon saw her and saw a helpless sinner, not worth the time, someone to be avoided. Jesus saw a forgiven sinner. Jesus pointed at her expression of love and said, "That's how you know she's been forgiven," to Simon. He said, "Look, she's been forgiven. Obviously, she's been forgiven because look at the way she's expressing her love toward me." That love follows receiving the forgiveness. It follows that faith. I imagine at some point out in the town, she had encountered Jesus. She had seen him healing people. She had seen him caring for the outcast. Luke makes that clear all throughout his gospel, how Jesus cared for the people who were marginalized, who had typically been seen as outcasts. He cared for them. He healed them. She would have heard him talking about God's kingdom and about how people can enter into it and inviting people into it. And at some point, it sparked in her heart and she realized, and at some point, she experienced something powerful from Jesus that let her know her life was changed. And so she went home and she got this jar of this incredibly expensive perfume, probably her life savings, and she went looking for Jesus. And she found him in Simon's home. And she went and she broke that box open and poured it on his feet. Didn't care about what anybody else said. And in that moment, the difference between the way Jesus sees her and the way Simon and the others saw her becomes crystal clear. Simon, again, sees her as sinful to be avoided. He judges Jesus as obviously phony because he doesn't recognize what this woman is. But the truth is, Jesus saw what she was, but sees that now what she is a forgiven daughter of God who's put her faith in him and sees what she will be by his side forever, a productive part of his kingdom. And ironically, Jesus sees something else. Jesus sees Simon's thoughts. Simon kept all this, you know, brave talk to himself. He said it in his head, but Jesus saw that too. So ironically, in the whole thing, we have Simon who thinks he sees everything most clearly about what's happening, and he's the one who's the most blind in the whole thing because Jesus is the one who's seeing it all. Now, how does Jesus see Simon then? Because look, you and I have read enough stories like this that you could quickly, if you just see him as a character and not a real human being, say, oh, so he's the guy in the story who's the jerk, he's the idiot, he's the villain, and so he's going to get egg on his face because he deserves it. And so you might just walk away from the story thinking that Jesus just saw him as this pathetic jerk who was self-righteous, and Jesus was just like, Simon, I'm going to stick it to you, and you got egg on your face now. How do you feel? Because I proved you wrong. Like, that's how most stories go. And you might think, yeah, that's how Jesus sees him. But that's not how Jesus saw him. And I think it's really important for you and I to recognize this, to see this clearly, because the truth is, a lot of us more relate to Simon than the woman. See, I think when Jesus went into his house, it's because Jesus cared about him. Jesus went into the house of all different kinds of people, the unrighteous and the self-righteous. They all needed to hear. They all needed to be offered this opportunity to enter into God's kingdom and have God's kingdom planted in their heart. And so he went in there to give that to them. He didn't just dismiss them as an idiot. He told them this parable to give them the opportunity to recognize where he'd gone wrong, to give them the opportunity to see that he needed this forgiveness. He made it clear. He said, yeah, maybe this one guy's debt was smaller, but neither of them could pay it. He made that clear for Simon so that he would have a chance to see, a chance to discover this peace that he had given this woman. He doesn't tell the girl, oh, you know, don't worry about them. They're a bunch of idiots. They don't know better. You're going to be with me in paradise. Forget them. He doesn't do that. No, he has compassion, I think, on Simon and gives him this chance to find that peace. Worship team, would you start to come back? Look, we don't know if Simon eventually or ever accepted that peace because, again, Luke ends the story walking away from Simon and focuses it back on the woman. And on what Jesus says in that last verse, he looks at her and says, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Her faith that Jesus had the power to forgive her sin, was able to do it and willing to do it, her faith in him led to her being saved, having this new kingdom in her, entering to this new kingdom. And so she walked away in peace. She had probably started that day in misery. I don't know what the life of a prostitute is like, but you could just imagine being used and abused, having all kinds of people wrap themselves around you to use you. She was likely controlled by at least one other person, probably several. Whatever her circumstances before that day, no one had ever wrapped themselves around her to love her, to save her, to protect her. And then she meets Jesus. And she experienced what he was all about. Not just the words he said, but the force of his life and his presence in this world to become like one of us, to come to wrap himself around her so he could take the blow of death, the sting of death, to selflessly sacrifice himself for her in a way that's unfathomable. That's what she experienced in Jesus. And he stepped in and took that fall for her. And so she trusted Jesus, put her faith in him, and that's why she went away in peace, and Simon went away just, what? How am I not part of God's kingdom? I'm better than her. Come on, look at her. Let's not any of us be left out or miss out on having God's kingdom in us because of our self-righteousness. Let's recognize we all have a debt we cannot pay. And let's all look at Jesus and say, thank you for your forgiveness. Thank you for your love. And let's respond to this with faith, the kind of faith that shows itself in love. Think about the way, again, that she worshiped Jesus. And let's think about ourselves. We're going to sing a song at the end. We're going to sing the song we started with. And I hope maybe after hearing what we've heard about this woman and the way she worshiped Jesus, because she so appreciated what he had done and because of her faith evidenced itself in extravagant worshiping love, maybe we'll sing it a little bit louder. Maybe we'll sing it, maybe your feet will move a little bit. Maybe you'll clap a little bit more. Maybe you'll stand up right now because you're getting the sense that maybe it's time to stand up. And let's worship Jesus because of what he's done for us.